the sidewalk in Colbert Boulevard was a little high, and the cars were lower. So when someone got out of the car, they had to step up to the sidewalk. So the brahmachari got out of the car, opened the door, and Srila Prabhupada looked very low in the car. So he was struggling to get up onto the sidewalk. And I was looking at this, and I was wondering if I should go over and help Srila Prabhupada to get out of the car. And I was trying to send a message to the brahmachari, help Srila Prabhupada get out of the car. And he was really struggling. And finally, and the brahmachari is standing there with the door open, watching Srila Prabhupada struggling to get out of the car. And I felt so devastated. Finally, he got out of the car, went into Golden Avatar, and started recording. And I thought, I felt so terrible that I didn't help Srila Prabhupada get out of the car. And so I waited there for 2 hours until Srila Prabhupada came out after his recording session. And the brahmachari had parked a little bit distant. So when Prabhupada came out, I went up to Srila Prabhupada. And I said, Srila Prabhupada, please forgive me for not helping you get out of the car. And Srila Prabhupada was actually smaller than me in stature. And he was walking with the brahmachari, and he looks at the brahmachari, and he says, what did she say? And he says, oh, it's nothing, Srila Prabhupada. And I'm saying, I guess it's something, Srila Prabhupada. Please forgive me. I didn't help you when you were struggling to get out of the car. I didn't help you. And I feel dreadful that I didn't help my spiritual master and do that seva. Please forgive me. Again, he looks at the brahmachari. What is she saying? And then the brahmachari says, Srila Prabhupada, it's nothing. By this time, I'm frantic. I felt to cry. I felt extremely nervous. And my life is devastated. So then finally, I said, Srila Prabhupada, please forgive me. I did not help you get out of the car. You struggled so much to get out of the car, and I should have been there to help you. In a loving, loving way, he looked at me and seeing my frenzy and bewilderment. And he said, it's okay, don't worry, it's okay. Then I went to the temple and saw my good friend Manmohini, and I explained to her what happened. And she started to laugh and laugh and laugh. Very devastating, but that's Srila Prabhupada's always bestowing kindness, seeing my very fallen condition. So I wrote something based on something I heard Prabhupada say. He was saying in a lecture, he was talking about how to prove wrong the scientists who are saying there's no life anywhere in the universe except on Earth. So he uses the example of the sun and the moon. There's life in the source and the sun. The sun is the source of life. And if there's life on the, if the moon is the source of vegetation that we all thrive on, then these bodies, these heavenly bodies, have to have life on them too. This was his logic. So in the same way, I was thinking how Srila Prabhupada came to give us eternity and how an eternal relationship, in an eternal relationship, what is the question of separation? Giving life to all the worlds, controlling destiny. Expansive rays of heat and life embrace infinity. Blood and bones could not survive upon its blazing shell. Does this mean the source of life can be compared to hell? In the night, the beams of light nourish land and fields. Fruits of the earth, the harvest blooms, abundantly it yields. Is this source of sustenance merely made of dust, flaunting as its surface a barren, lifeless crust? You showed us eternity, of which we are all part. My eternal master, you are always in my heart. How can it be that you are gone when you are in my mind? Without the vision of your words, to everything I'm blind. As it is only foolishness to think that no one lives upon the sun, the source of life, who generously gives, or on the moon, whose nectar bathes us all and we survive. I will not be away from you. Your words are how I thrive. This moment in eternity may seem we're not together, but I have made a sacred vow no mundane thing can sever. If bound to you eternally, can there be separation? I place my head upon your feet in tearful meditation. Guys,
Shri Prabhu and then Mother Mara talk to Gopal.
Nama Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasthana Bhutala Shumate Vakti Vedanta Swamite Namine Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Gachamine Mera Vishesha Sunyavani Paschati Vesitaya. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada's contributions are incomprehensible on every level of material and spiritual existence. Spiritually, he gave us the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by which we can actually attain the most sacred, topmost abode of Sri Vrindavan Dham and reside there eternally in loving service to Lord Krishna. Such an opportunity is quite rare, very rare, very seldom given by the Supreme Lord. It comes only once in the day of Brahma, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to give this topmost goal. Of course, as we surrender to Krishna, he rewards us accordingly, and we may not take that, but we may get Vaikuntha. We may also attain impersonal realization. Or we may stay in this material world where dharma, artha, kama are prominent. Srila Prabhupada has contributed on all different levels of material and spiritual experience. Yet, the image we get of him, as we saw in the film when the Bhaktivedanta Academy students were teaching, the image we get of him is as of him offering full dandavats to the deities. Generally speaking, if someone is very influential or powerful in this world, in the heavenly planets, they're seated on a big seat, dictating all the surroundings around them, being worshipped. But we see the image of Srila Prabhupada offering his dandavat obeisances. Actually, that image is giving us a clue to how Srila Prabhupada could be and is so influential on all levels of material and spiritual existence. Because he surrendered to Krishna. By surrendering to Krishna, everything becomes possible. And Srila Prabhupada practically demonstrated that for us by his surrender and by his unparalleled contribution. We're very, very fortunate that we have the opportunity, as we've heard here today, of such an influential, powerful personality as Srila Prabhupada. We're fortunate that there are so many little intimate exchanges that so many devotees have had with him. It's one thing to be very influential, all powerful, all great. It's another thing to be able to share simple, loving exchanges in the way in which Srila Prabhupada did with his disciples and those that weren't present during his physical presence in dreams or meditations or realizations from reading his books. Constantly, Srila Prabhupada is giving oceans of mercy, endearing us to him, and opening to us possibilities, all possibilities, materially and spiritually. Of course, we want to take advantage of the spiritual opportunities he's given us. But when we surrendered to Srila Prabhupada, we came with nothing. And so now we see we have something. So Prabhupada has given us all that we have. So our duty, our response, our reciprocation with Srila Prabhupada is try to serve him in any little or big way that we can. Try to serve him. He's the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. And if we follow in his footsteps, that will be appropriate reciprocation with him for all that he has given to us. So personally, on this Disappearance Day, I'm Srila Prabhupada, I pray that I may always have this attitude of rendering some little service to Srila Prabhupada, whatever I can do with all that he has given me. Thank you, Srila.
So, Naganarataka and then Shankar Prabhu will be our follow.
It's amazing when you think of the humble beginnings of our movement in Tompkins Square Park, what great strides we have made in 50 years in spreading Srila Prabhupada's teachings in Krishna consciousness. In the, for example, the former Soviet bloc, all of those countries now, Russia, Lithuania, Ukraine, Georgia, Estonia, Moldova, there's Kazakhstan, there's a few others also. The devotees are saying now that in all those countries, there are more initiated devotees now than there are in the entire Western world combined, North America, South America, Europe, and Australia, and New Zealand. So there's more devotees. So we have some catching up to do, I think. So that's one thing, making new devotees. And then also the other hand is maintaining the older devotees. And Srila Prabhupada had a very a humorous pastime in that regard, explaining that. I think most of you have probably heard the story of how our godbrother Dhananjaya got initiated. Dhananjaya, his name, of course, is the name for Arjun that is used in the Bhagavad Gita. It means winner of wealth. So when Srila Prabhupada, after he gave him the name, he said, there is money flying everywhere. You simply have to learn the art of catching it. You know? So then, I recently heard there's a continuation of that story. So Dhananjaya went to bed that night, and his mind was spinning because he was thinking, wow, Srila Prabhupada gave me a direct instruction to collect wealth, and then he was remembering something he had read in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in the 12th chapter. He had read, there's just a paragraph there about Maharaj Maruta, how he had performed a great sacrifice and the Supreme Lord was so pleased with him that he made him the custodian of a peak of solid gold of a mountain. So, so Srila Prabhupada says in that purport, this peak of gold is somewhere in the Himalaya mountains, and modern adventurers may try to find it there. So the next morning, Dhananjaya Prabhu asked him, Srila Prabhupada, is it true that there is a mountain peak in the Himalayas made of solid gold? Yes, there is such a peak. Do you know where it is? Why do you want to know? Srila Prabhupada asked. Dhananjaya said, well, if you tell me where it is, I'll get a rucksack and a special hammer and chisel and go to the top of that mountain, hack away at the gold, fill up the rucksack, and come down, and then we can use that gold in Krishna's service. So would you let me know where that mountain peak is? No, Srila Prabhupada replied. Why not? Dhananjaya asked. That would become too controversial, Srila Prabhupada said. Then he added, actually, more valuable than gold are devotees. You should make devotees. And then Srila Prabhupada wrote later, it is better to maintain a devotee than to try to convince others to become devotees. And he goes on, this is a letter from June 1972. He goes on. And I wanted to continue with that theme, the wonderful theme that Srila Prabhupada has never left us and he's always with us. Srila Prabhupada wrote in a letter, this is from November 1973, please always try to remember me by my teachings and we shall always be together. Just like I had written in the first publications of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the spiritual master lives forever by his divine instructions and the disciple lives with him. Because I have always served my Guru Maharaj and followed his teachings, I am now even never separated from him. Sometimes Maya may come and try to interfere, but we must not falter. We must always follow the chalked out path laid down by the great Acharyas, and in the end, you will see. And one time, our god sister Yamuna Devi asked Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, how many times were you with your Guru Maharaj? Srila Prabhupada answered, since I met him, I have never been away from him, not for one second. So I hope we can all imbibe that mood. I just want to say to Srila Prabhupada, happy 50th anniversary, Srila Prabhupada. May the 100th anniversary and the 1,000th and the 10,000th be even better, so countless souls can be delivered back home, all due to you, our beloved Guru. You will go down in history as having saved the whole world. Glories, glories to you, Srila Prabhupada.
So, Shankar Prabhu, are you there? Okay. And followed by Anada.
Well, I've already told all my stories, so what I'll do is I'll start from the beginning, the first time, first instruction from Srila Prabhupada. Then I'll ask you out there to let me know which story you want me to tell, because I've already told them all already. I don't know where to begin or anything like that. Anyways, in 1973, I was in Laguna Beach, and we used to go to this farm in Escondido to get organic vegetables. So we heard that Srila Prabhupada was coming to Los Angeles. And so I got it in my head, why don't I just gather a whole bunch of organic vegetables in a big box and give them to Srila Prabhupada. So we drove up to Los Angeles. So then I was waiting, Prabhupada, when he pulls up in the back there, he pulls up in the back and he goes in the temple that way. Anyways, I was kneeling down with this big box of vegetables in front of me. And Swarup Damodar, he was my friend then, he was behind me. So then Srila Prabhupada's car pulls up. They open the door and Prabhupada steps out and he stands and looks down at me. And then I look up at Srila Prabhupada and I say, Srila Prabhupada, please accept these vegetables. And then Swarup Damodar said, this boy has grown all these vegetables. I never have not grown anything. I never even seen a cow. I mean, I was out of it. Yeah. So then Prabhupada paused for a moment. He looked down at me and said, you must go to Mayapur and make gardens. And that was my first instruction from Srila Prabhupada. So what I did, I went traveling Sankirtan all over California with a bunch of brahmacharis. I know what it's like to go on Harinam. But anyways, I collected enough money to go to 1974 Mayapur Festival. So I got to New York. You know, the plane was even from New York. So as soon as I got to the temple, I went to Bali Madan. And I said, Srila Prabhupada wants me to go to India. He says, no, you're not going. You're not even being invited on this plane. You're not on the list. So I went to the embassy, I went to the airport, I got my ticket on the same plane they were on. It was cool. I was going to India. And then they had this big, gigantic bag of samosas. They wouldn't even give me one. They didn't want me to go. It was really such a heavy trip. Anyways, we got to Mayapur. Then we had a big feast. And they served out this beautiful Bengali eggplant sabji, you know, and it was served out in stool buckets that weren't washed. So everybody who ate the eggplant sabji had dysentery. They had three Kavi Rajas there. There were people, it was a mess. Anyways, I'm on the balcony, all zoned out, you know, and Bhavananda Swami comes up to me and he says, see all this land? This is for you to grow. And I said, I don't know how to grow anything. He scratched his head. Then he went up to Tamal Krishna. So Tamal Krishna and Bhavananda went to see Srila Prabhupada. So the three of them were in there trying to figure out, what are we going to do with Shankardas? He didn't know how to do any gardening. So I guess they all decided, we'll send him to Bombay. So I went to Bombay. I forgot how I got there. Anyways, I got to Bombay, and I met Chaitya Guru, and they said, now you're going to tear apart Narayan's garden. Narayan had built this garden in Bombay. It was just a shack. But he had built this garden. They want me to tear it apart and rebuild it. So after a couple of days, Prabhupada came from Mayapur. And he stayed in Bombay at this point for 3 months. He was just there in Bombay. Anyways, I was working in the garden, and Chaitya Guru comes up to me and says, you have to go see Srila Prabhupada. I said, well, I don't want to go see Srila Prabhupada. Anyways, he persuaded me. So I went up to the stairs. So we opened the door, and I offered my obeisances, and he offered his obeisances. Then Chaitya Guru and Prabhupada started talking in Hindi, and they were laughing and talking in Hindi. I'm just sitting there, completely bewildered. And then they stopped talking and laughing. And then I said, Srila Prabhupada, you have asked me to come here to Bombay. What would you like me to do? My second instruction. And Srila Prabhupada said, I want you to put a flower in every square inch of land on this Juhu property. I almost succeeded, but I got kicked out of Bombay before I could do it anyway. I almost succeeded. It was a struggle because I had to deal with all these neighbors who had these yards and they were tenants. I mean, they didn't want to do nothing, but I convinced them, you know, let me do a garden in your yard. That was going really good. Anyway, so that was the second instruction I got from Srila Prabhupada. So the next day, Chaitanya Guru says, you got to go up and see Srila Prabhupada again. So this is my third instruction from Srila Prabhupada. So we went up there and the same thing happened. Chaitanya Guru and Prabhupada were just talking in Hindi and laughing and joking. And then it started, then it stopped. Then I said, Srila Prabhupada, do you want me to grow vegetables? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, it's cheaper to buy the vegetables in the market. And I said, well, what about fruits? And Prabhupada's eyes lit up and he said, yes, chiku, guava, bananas. And so I made a beautiful fruit garden in the backyard. I'll tell you this really far out story. I was growing these strawberry bananas. There's about 100 of them on a thing. They're about this big and they're pink inside. And they're so sweet. Anyway, Prabhupada was going on a world tour or going someplace. Anyway, he was going to the Bombay airport. And in the garden, I had this huge, gigantic thing of bananas that were all ripe. So I cut it. And I brought it to the airport. So I walked into the airport and Prabhupada was sitting there. And I walked up to Srila Prabhupada. I said, Srila Prabhupada, would you like a banana? And Prabhupada said, did you grow these? I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. Then immediately, out of like grease lightning, he just grabbed the banana, peeled it, ate the whole banana. Then he said, you must pass them out to everybody. Now, so I went all over the airport, passing out bananas. And then Hari Kesh, he was a brahmachari, he jumped up on this table and he started preaching. I mean, it was a really far out thing. Anyways, so now it's your turn. What story do you want me to tell? What? Why did he kick you out of Bombay? Oh, this is a long story. You know, this is one you never heard. This is a real heavy story. Anyways, I was in Hyderabad in 76. I was at the farm. And then I was there doing this whole thing with a cobra. And he cursed me. And someone tried to chop my head off with an axe. I got this scar right here. A devotee tried to chop my head off and offered to goddess Kali. He was a Kali worshiper before he joined the movement. And he thought I was going to take over his position as pujari. So that night I was laying beside Gorni Thai in the deity room. I didn't know what was going to happen because I got cursed by the snake. But see, there was this guy. There was this guy in Hyderabad farm, and there was a cobra about this big. Just going like this, spitting, and all the kids were poking sticks at it and throwing small rocks at this cobra. So I stopped everybody. I got rid of everybody. And then I just looked at the cobra right in the eyes, just like that, for at least a whole minute. We were just looking at each other, me and this cobra. And then I ducked my head. I took two big boulders and I smashed them into three pieces. I broke them in two pieces so it was three pieces. Then I built a fire and I put the snake on the fire and I did the fire jugger and then it rained. It was perfect. Everything was going good. And then I turned my back to head for my coot and I could feel the presence of something so evil and powerful, like I never felt before in my life. I turned around and there was nothing there. So then that night, I lay beside Gorni Thai in the deity room, and then this guy came in with a brand new axe while I'm laying down like this, and he went, yeah, and the axe stuck in my chin. That was the first blow of the snake. That's the first time. That's the first breaking of the snake. So I had this axe in my shin, and I was pulled it up, and I started chasing the guy screaming. I'm a Vietnam veteran, you know. They trained me real well. Anyways, it took them 3 hours to get me to a hospital. By the time I got to the hospital, my dhoti and kurta were completely covered in blood. And then they took all my clothes off. They put something on my chin, you know, and I had to wait for another hour till the doctor came. And then the second blow of the snake, they stitched me without Novocaine, with nothing, just bare root, with this rope. Oh, Mahamsa Swami said they could hear my screams all the way outside. So anyways, I went to the police station. And I said, I'm not leaving India. They said, why? I said, well, someone tried to kill me. You haven't caught him. I'm not leaving. I'm going to see justice. I'm going to see this guy hang. I did a whole trip. I just laid it out on him. And I said, all right, all right, all right. 1 year visa. 1 year. I still hadn't caught the guy. I was at Pujari in Hyderabad with free car, doing all kinds of crazy things. And then I went in there again the second time. And then the same thing happened, and then they said, gave me a 1 year visa. And finally they caught the guy. And then I identified him, everything, you know. They gave him 1 year in a cracker box and let him go. You know, it was all rigged. There's so many stories about this. Anyways, I got lost track of that. What was I saying? I couldn't hear what. Oh yeah, the cobra. So anyway, so they stitched me without Novocaine. And Mahamsa Swami said they could hear my screams all the way outside. Anyways, after the second year, they caught the guy and let him go. Then they said, well now, Mr. Mattson, you have to leave Hyderabad. So I got on a train and went back to Bombay, and I hung out in Bombay. And then this is what happened. I got to Bombay and I was there for a few days, and then I got the call. I was the one who answered the phone in Bombay, and Gopal Krishna said, Sri Prabhupada has just been put in the ground in a samadhi. And then I don't know what happened. And I guess Sarabi and everybody, we all got in a plane and went to Vrindavan, and the Swami gave me a flower from the garland that's on the Samadhi from in Mayapur, and I wear that when I get my thing sick. Anyways, I just lost it. I will always bow.
Hare Krishna. So, Anada. Thank you. And followed by Pushkar.
There's no need to say that I'm perfectly disqualified to glorify Srila Prabhupada. But I'd like to try anyway, and I thank you very much for allowing me. Balavanta Prabhu, the other day, he quoted from Hamlet. I hope I get it right, but he said that and you could correct me if you know, but Hamlet told Horatio that, Horatio, you haven't any idea. You couldn't even dream of what's going on in this world. So in the same way, he was referring to Srila Prabhupada. But we cannot imagine the power of our Srila Prabhupada. And as many devotees have mentioned over the years of association with Srila Prabhupada, that he is the personality that has struck their hearts to such an extent, or struck our hearts to such an extent, that we cannot let go, we cannot live for a moment without him and without the association of everything that he's given us. I'll just briefly mention the last time that Srila Prabhupada came to London. Uchira Prabhu and Adikata Prabhu were there as well. There's a picture I remember of Srila Prabhupada on his Vyasa. Actually, he wasn't on his Vyasa son. He was always carried from his rooms upstairs down to where his Vyasa son was, and placed in front of it on a palanquin made by Kishori's daughter. Prabhupada wasn't speaking at that time, but he would just come down every day for the greeting of the deities, for the greeting of his deities. That line, prema bhakti jaha hoite avidya vinasha jaite, is perfectly exemplified in Srila Prabhupada. But just by his presence, his Prabhupada is always emanating prema bhakti, and that prema bhakti is dissipating the ignorance within us and giving us a glimpse of what life is really about. And as Jamuna would say, which she heard from Srila Prabhupada and she passed on to us, that Prabhupada would say that it's our duty to become fit receptacles for Krishna and Guru's mercy, or Guru and Krishna's mercy, that Prabhupada has bestowed upon each and every one of us more facility than we can ever use. We are thoroughly spoiled spiritually, and it appears that especially the older devotees, or perhaps I'm just speaking to myself, and I shouldn't. So actually I'm just speaking to myself, but I really need to I need to be real to Srila Prabhupada. I need to really reciprocate with Srila Prabhupada. And I'd like to request your blessings that I develop the courage to do that. We all know that there's a world out there waiting for Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And it's a fact we're all racking our brains and hearts to try to figure out how to become the type of devotee that will attract that will spontaneously attract people to Prabhupada and keep them there. And at the same time, we're having to keep the love that Prabhupada wants us to keep within our own realm here. So again, to quote Prabhupada, that our movement means very little, or an offering means very little, if it's not done with, if it's not overflowing, or at least somehow saturated with love, loving devotion. So I pray to Srila Prabhupada that we can all become purified by his example, by his words, his books, and also that we don't, that we, although changes have been made and mistakes have been made, it's never too late, never too early to rectify mistakes and changes, because what Prabhupada has given, every single word, every single motion of Srila Prabhupada is perfect, and nothing needs to be changed. Nothing really needs to be improved upon except our own dedication and devotion. Thank you for hearing me out. I appreciate your kindness and tolerance. I'm such a fallen soul, but I'm begging you to pick me up with your association. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada. So Pushkar Prabhu and then Mother Annapurna. There you go. I could tell some really sad stories. I was there for 7-8 months until Prabhupada left the planet, as they say. But some memorable things. Like we're fasting now. So why are we fasting? Practically, I don't like fasting. There's not too many people like fasting. But there was a time about, you have to go forensically, but maybe 2 weeks or 10 days before Prabhupada left, that none other than Narayan Raj had come and conferred with Prabhupada about, well, most of us wouldn't be in the room at the time, but I remember standing up. And if anyone here remembers, in Krishna Balaram restaurant used to be at one point just above where you walk into the building, the guest house, Krishna Balaram restaurant. And Yasoda Nandan, who was a swami at the time, and I saw some rickshaw, flatbed rickshaw to carry stuff, and had big burlap sacks. And I said, what's that? What do these guys got? And he said, whoa. The salt for the samadhi. Yeah. He kind of lost most of his French accent now, but Canadian. But he had a little more in those days. So I remember this kind of a just thinking. I wasn't thinking that much. This is 10 days before or so. It's sometime before, not that much. And so he said, there's salt for the samadhi. Narayan Raj ordered that salt for the samadhi. And I'm Prabhupada's there in this room. And then they took some string and they were making the samadhi in front where it would be just after that. So still, this is like the verse in the Mahabharata that says, Hanyahani Bhutani Gacchanti Yatan Satya Yamalaya. We don't still think we're going to leave. So nobody still thought that Prabhupada would leave in all this going on. So a little after that, then Someone told me I should go and hide at the Goshal because the police were looking to arrest me for being illegal or something, not being immigration properly or anything. So then the day before Prabhupada left, and still, anyway, I remember going, I had to go bribe the guys in Mathura, and I was walking away from the immigration. It was near the bus stop. Going toward the bus stop, I got a little tap on my shoulder. I turned around. It was Krishnas Babaji, Prabhupada's godbrother. So if you didn't see Krishnas Babaji, then you didn't see him. But if you saw him, he was amazing. And so he asked me, how is your Prabhupada? But this is all this before, of course. So I said, oh, the Kaviyar said he would have made some improvement. Krishna's mercy, and he did a little dance, and he had this umbrella for the sun. He was Babaji, all he had really was an umbrella. I don't think he had too much else. So he said, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy. Anyway, I had to leave. So when I was in Delhi, and I just bought a ticket to go to Nepal to try to become legal, and I was in the, somehow in the in Connaught place, there was some American Express, I had to get some money. I don't know how it worked, but I was there. Gopal Krishna Maharaj. It wasn't a Maharaj then. Gopal. He comes running up the steps. He said, oh, Prabhupada will leave. In 6 hours, he's leaving. And the whole time, we were thinking, Prabhupada, that he can stay 10 years, 10,000 years. He's been not, he only ate this much in 6 months. So we had no idea, even with all these things going on, that this would happen. So I said, 6 hours? Are you sure? How do you say like that now? He said, no, Kaviraj, he knows. I said, so I can go with you back to Vrindavan? And he said, no, you can't. There's no room in the car. He said, you just spent all your money on a ticket to Nepal. I told him, so you stay here and then we'll call you. So there was another devotee, Jayo. Anybody remember Jayo? We were the only ones left in the Delhi temple. It was a Feroz Gandhi road. So, sure enough, phone rings in those days. And now any rickshaw wala can call, you know, to Alaska. But in those days, you couldn't actually call too easily out of Vrindavan. Maybe you could, but what, take a few hours. So he called just after Prabhupada left, 7:14. So that's kind of in my head. And when I got the call, I immediately put a lightning call. In those days, I don't know about now, if you need still lightning calls. That costs more money. So I put lightning call to L.A. and called Rameshwar somehow, told him that. It was a something that happened along the way. And just during Govardhan Puja time, there's a very famous story how Prabhupada wanted to go on the bullock cart. And there was big nothing really. It was quiet. But there was some controversy going on. That Prabhupada wanted to go, and Bhavananda and Tamal, they were the main handlers. They were saying, no, Prabhupada, you can't go. And then Prabhupada was saying very dramatic things. Yes, I can go to Govardhan and die by the hands of Ramachandra, or I can stay here and die by the Ravana. So people are still going to meditate on that for the next 100,000 kalpas. But I was sitting next to Bhagatji. Bhagatji was intimate. Of course, he was younger than Prabhupada, but somehow he had this intimate relationship with Prabhupada. I was sitting there, that place we covered now, I think, but a generator was there and was just there next to the temple on that side. Anyone knows Vrindavan, they know. So I said to Bhagatji, like that, he's sitting right next to me. I said, so Prabhupada will go to Govardhan or not? And he looked at me and he went, he won't go. Like that. Like, are you crazy? We can't let him go. So that was a mood that they didn't, because Prabhupada was so delicate that it took several devotees just to turn him in the bed. And that was going on. Light was dim.
A couple of times when I was in there, Prabhupada asked for Krishna's Babaji. Where is Babaji Maharaj? I remember Bhakti Chus ran out, jumped on a rickshaw. He went down because he knew how to find him. He used to stay many times at Madhav Maharaj's mat near the train station, bus station, train station. And he came back, and the atmosphere would be surcharged when he came in. He was a very enlivened person. Prabhupada asked for him like that. In fact, he said, you can take Babaji Maharaj to Govardhan. So he, instead of him, because he was such a person like that. I remember sitting in front of the, they filled it in now, but there was a door when you came out of the lobby of Krishna Balaram, bottom there. But it used to be an open door. Now it's no door, it's a wall. But at that time, I was sitting on the steps, and Pishima, Prabhupada's sister, was there talking to Krishna's Babaji. So they had such personalities. I used to have to go and clean. My job was to clean the quarters. I remember the time they brought the bed in. Prabhupada used to stay in the back. And then put Prabhupada, it was open and Prabhupada would sit. But then there was a day that they brought the bed in. And he was lying there in the main room. At the time, things changed. And so it was a very somber atmosphere for a long time. Another shocking thing, which most people weren't there, but Prabhupada had gone to England, and when he came back, I can't remember, he was coming back from England. I think it was England, and it drove up to the back gate, and the car door opened, and Prabhupada was lying in the back seat, and he brought him out, and he lost so much more weight than we even saw before. It was like, we were very much shocked. And we brought him in Palanquin. So this is some of the little glimpses of what was going on in Vrindavan. It was a very somber mood for a long time building up. So I was in Mayapur in March of that 77, and I was having a conversation with Prabhupada. I did this one big painting. Partially I painted it just out from his quarters in Mayapur on the back veranda, because I used his little sitting chokhi, I think they call, as a model, and I was painting it and into the painting. It's still there in the room, the old GBC room. So then when I did finally finished it, and I was in there alone with Prabhupada looking at the painting, and he said, yes, very expert. If you continue like this, painting, he said, in disciplic succession, then you will go back to Godhead. And he's told me to give the painting to big, big life members. He said, do more of these paintings, give them to big, big life members. So that never happened. The temple kept the painting. But Prabhupada had this idea, of course, that they would become attached or have some more relationship. Dadati Pratigrinati. He wanted to... This is part of Rupa Goswami's, strong part of Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada was able to put forth, to interact. In fact, Prabhupada gave that example in one lecture, even in Bombay. When he was speaking on this, Dadati Pratigunati, just like he said, and we think of it as intimate exchange with devotees, but Prabhupada actually said, just like the members, they come, they give donation, we give them books, we give them prasad. So it's not just Dadati Pratigunati, Bhunkti Bhujayate Chaira. Guyam Akati Pritchati, he said, so we speak with them. Interestingly enough, he extended that shloka. You would think, and we hear that this is guhyam means confidentiality, but still he applied it to the life member, our relation with the life members. So that relation, just like this Dr. Sharma, he was the head of some school. So when he came in Vrindavan, just to give an idea, and I don't know if anybody remembers this, but he didn't bow. I mean, everyone comes to the temple, anyone from any Indian, any villager, any whatever, hardly see someone doesn't bow to the deities. But I remember, even after so many months, he's still standing. He never bowed even. But Prabhupada put him in charge of the Gurukula because he knew how to do it. That this is how Prabhupada was engaging people. We're thinking, oh, if we were thinking, we'd be thinking, oh, this guy, he doesn't even bow. Why would they ever put him in charge of the Gurukula? No, probably put him in charge because he was qualified. Very qualified to do it. Later, I became a Babaji in Vrindavan. I'm sure he must have started bowing to the deity. Prabhupada had a big, Mara said, a big net catching people. Okay. So some of the pastimes, the well-known pastime, I brought Prabhupada a painting. I had this cockamamie idea that I would paint the trees from the balcony of Krishna Balaram guest house. This idea that the trees are in the spiritual, this is Vrindavan. Let me just practice painting the trees, non-different from Krishna, the trees. So I painted trees, and then someone was saying, you're painting trees? Where's Krishna? I think probably Yasodhananda, he would be on my case. Hey, Pushka, you're painting trees. Then when I finally painted Krishna, he said, hey, that Krishna looks like Bombay Krishna. I said, what do you mean? Bomb? Anyway, that's another thing. So I put Krishna, put a couple coward boys. Time was ready. I wanted to see and show it to Prabhupada. So I went down and put the painting down. That was he staying upstairs where you could look out. Anyway, you know, there's several places there on the roof. So you could look out toward the backside entrance. And Prabhupada looked at that painting for like, seemed to me at least a minute without saying anything. And that, like a minute in Prabhupada's type of looking at something is like the Brahma's day. If you're waiting for him to say something about it, you would, and I'm like, oh, he's just looking at me. What are they going to say something? And finally he said, what is the idea? What is the idea? And I was like, well, I said, Krishna's there, and coward boys, there's two coward boys there. That woman has the painting, actually, Kanya, Manokanya. She lives in Bhagachi's old house. So anyway, somehow she got that painting now. But so he said like that, what is the idea? If anyone hasn't heard the story, but it's always good. Sora likes to rub it in whenever he sees me. She's, hey, Pushka, what's the idea? Something like that. Because I don't even remember him being there. I know Tamal must have been there or someone like that. But, you know, because I was zoomed in on Prabhupada looking at the painting. Finally, I said, yeah, Krishna's there, the coward boys. He said, but what verse is it? I couldn't say anything. I couldn't. And I said, oh, nectar devotion? No, I said, Krishna is unlimited. No, not good. Prabhupada said, Krishna is unlimited. You are limited. Stick to the book. No, I wanted to gauge how much he didn't like it. So I said, Prabhupada, could this be used in a book to print? He didn't say anything. So he didn't say no. He didn't say yes. Anyway, it's never been in the book. So that was a story of that painting. So just because Prabhupada said I was expert two or three other times, that got nullified. And previously, a month or two before, I was summoned in April or so by Tamal Krishna. They'd had a committee of Yasodhananda, Tamal, TKG, and this Prem Yogi. He was Prem Swami, Prem Yogi, and he became Bhakti Prem Swami. And that guy was a character. But he knew so much stuff. And so Prabhupada had been looking for someone to, let's say, not correct, but update the fifth canto. He claimed that Prabhupada said he was a layman. And long story, but basically, I was in Prabhupada's room once, and this guy, Bhakti Prem Swami, he was in the last sannyas initiation. He got first, second, and sannyas in one day. Bhakti Chu took sannyas, and that Chaita Guru that he mentioned became Bhakti Chaitanya Swami. Anyways, so he was translating books into Hindi from English, first canto like that. And I was sitting there one day in Prabhupada's quarters, and he was getting a massage, and just, it was Yasomati and Gopal. They were complaining. They knew Hindi. They said, oh, he's giving some Mayavad in the translations, Prabhupada. He's not. He's tweaking. And they didn't say tweaking, but they were trying to make themselves understood to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, he is one of our men now. He didn't seem to bother him. He said, and also he accepted that we know. He said, no longer we don't have to look for any pundit now to work on fifth canto. He's good. You know. So despite their protestations, Prabhupada accepted him. Blind uncle better than no uncle, like that. So anyway, they had a committee, and we used to bring in these maps. I was drawing the maps, and they were discussing how the structure of the universe was, because in the original fifth canto, it wasn't given in detail. We didn't understand it. It was really hard to understand. So Prem Yogi was considered the expert, and so we were doing that and bringing in. And we had to put together these papers so there would be like an 8-foot sheet of paper. We hold it for a Prabhupada. And one day, nobody was there, and I was sitting with Prabhupada. Somehow they went out of the room. And I said, Prabhupada, we just, you know, got the idea. Mount Sumeru was like 80 or 800,000 miles, 80,000 yojanas. It's big, right? Big, you know, like you'd notice it. So I just couldn't. I thought, it's not going to happen ever again. So I said, Prabhupada, can't see this stuff. We don't see Mount Sumeru. No one can see it. It must be subtle. I said it. Prabhupada said, yes, subtle. Then I said, because this, now they're still fighting whether the, you know, how is it situated? Bhumandala, the earth separated. Is it a globe? Is it floating? Is it on a Gulf tea or something? So I said, what it says in the different places in Bhagavatam, Gola means globe, and you mentioned it also, it's a globe, right? We show the Vraha, I said to Prabhupada, Vraha is picking up, and it's tossed the globe. Just, I wanted to get it straight in my mind. And he didn't say anything, he just looked at me. Like, hey, you're an idiot or something. So they're fighting over it now, the planetarium. So. These things are going on. Huh? What is the idea? Prabhupada, what's the idea? Yeah. All right, so next victim. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
So, Annapurna and then Adi Devi.